course of half a year. I felt as drawn to her as ever, perhaps more than before. But the thought of what she had lost in the meantime also gave me cause for regret. Never again would she have that self-centered beauty that seems to take its own independent course in adolescent girls and no one else. Naoko said she wanted to hear about how I was spending my days. I talked about the student strike and Nagasawa. This was the first time I had ever said anything about him to her. I found it challenging to give her an accurate account of his odd humanity, his unique philosophy, and his uncentered morality. But Naoko seemed finally to grasp what I was trying to tell her. I hid the fact that I went out hunting girls with him, revealing only that the one person in the dorm I spent any real time with was this unusual guy. All the while, Reiko went through another practice of the Bach fugue she had played before, taking occasional breaks for wine and cigarettes.
"He sounds like a strange person," said Naoko.
"He is strange," I said.
"But you like him?"
"I'm not sure," I said. "I guess I can't say I like him. Nagasawa is beyond liking or not liking. He doesn't try to be liked. In that sense, he's a very honest guy. Stoic, even. He doesn't try to fool anybody."
"Stoic? Sleeping with all those girls?"
"Now that is weird," said Naoko, laughing.
"How many girls has he slept with?"
"It's probably up to 80 now," I said.
"But in his case, the higher the numbers go, the less each individual act seems to mean."
"Which is what I think he's trying to accomplish."
"And you call that stoic?"
"For him it is." Naoko thought about my words for a minute.
"I think he's a lot sicker in the head than I am," she said.
"So do I," I said.
"But he can put all of his warped qualities into a logical system. He's brilliant. If you brought him here, he'd be out in 2 days.
"Oh, sure, I know all that," he'd say. "I understand everything you're doing here."
"He's that kind of guy. The kind people respect." "I guess I'm the opposite of brilliant," said Naoko. "I don't understand anything they're doing here, any better than I understand myself."
"It's not because you're not smart," I said. "You're normal."
"I've got tons of things I don't understand about myself. We're both normal. Ordinary."
Naoko raised her feet to the edge of the sofa and rested her chin on her knees.
"I want to know more about you," she said.
"I'm just an ordinary guy. Ordinary family. Ordinary education. Ordinary face. Ordinary exam results. Ordinary thoughts in my head."
"You're such a big Scott Fitzgerald fan. Wasn't he the one who said you shouldn't trust anybody who calls himself an ordinary man? You lent me the book," said Naoko, with a mischievous smile.
"True," I said,
"but this is no affectation. I really truly believe deep down that I am an ordinary person."
"Can you find something in me that's not ordinary?"
"Of course I can," said Naoko, with a hint of impatience. "Don't you get it? Why do you think I slept with you? Because I was so drunk I would have slept with anyone?"
"No, of course I don't think that," I said. Naoko remained silent for a long time, staring at her toes. At a loss for words, I took another sip of wine.
"How many girls have you slept with, Toru?"
Naoko asked in a tiny voice, as if the thought had just crossed her mind. 8 or 9, I answered truthfully. Reiko plopped the guitar into her lap.
"You're not even 20 years old, she said. "What kind of life are you leading?"
Naoko kept silent and watched me with those clear eyes of hers. I told Reiko about the first girl I'd slept with and how we had broken up. I had found it impossible to love her, I explained. I went on to tell her about my sleeping with one girl after another under Nagasawa's tutelage.
I'm not trying to make excuses, but I was in pain, I said to Naoko. Here I was seeing you almost every week and talking with you, and knowing that the only one in your heart was Kizuki. It hurt. It really hurt. And I think that's why I slept with girls I didn't know.
Naoko shook her head for a few moments, and then she raised her face to look at me.
You asked me that time why I had never slept with Kizuki, didn't you? Do you still want to know?
I suppose it's something I really ought to know, I said.
I think so too, said Naoko. The dead will always be dead, but we have to go on living.
I nodded. Reiko played the same difficult passage over and over, trying to get it right.
I was ready to sleep with him, said Naoko, unclasping her hair slide and letting her hair down.
She toyed with the butterfly shape in her hands.
And of course he wanted to sleep with me. So we tried. We tried a lot. But it never worked. We couldn't do it. I didn't know why then, and I still don't know why. I loved him, and I wasn't worried about losing my virginity. I would have been glad to do anything he wanted. But it never worked.
Naoko lifted the hair she had let down and fastened it with the slide.
I couldn't get wet, she said in a tiny voice. I never opened to him, so it always hurt. I was just too dry. It hurt too much. We tried everything we could think of, creams and things, but still it hurt me. So I used my fingers, or my lips. I would always do it for him that way. You know what I mean?
I nodded in silence. Naoko cast her gaze through the window at the moon, which looked bigger and brighter now than it had before.
I never wanted to talk about any of this, she said. I wanted to shut it up in my heart. I wish I still could, but I have to talk about it. I don't know the answer. I mean, I was plenty wet the time I slept with you, wasn't I?
Uh-huh, I said.
I was wet from the minute you walked into my flat the night of my 20th birthday. I wanted you to hold me. I wanted you to take off my clothes, to touch me all over and enter me. I had never felt like that before. Why is that? Why do things happen like that? I mean, I really loved him.
And not me, I said. You want to know why you felt that way about me, even though you didn't love me.
I'm sorry, said Naoko. I don't mean to hurt you, but this much you have to understand. Kizuki and I had a truly special relationship. We had been together from the time we were three. It's how we grew up. Always together, always talking, understanding each other perfectly. The first time we kissed, it was in the first year of junior school, was just wonderful. The first time I had my period, I ran to him and cried like a baby. We were that close. So after he died, I didn't know how to relate to other people. I didn't know what it meant to love another person.
She reached for her wine glass on the table, but only managed to knock it over, spilling wine on the carpet. I crouched down and retrieved the glass, setting it on the table. Did she want to drink some more? I asked. Naoko remained silent for a while, then suddenly burst into tears, trembling all over. Slumping forward, she buried her face in her hands and sobbed with the same suffocating violence as she had that night with me. Reiko laid down her guitar and sat by Naoko, caressing her back. When she put an arm across Naoko's shoulders, she pressed her face against Reiko's chest like a baby.
"You know," Reiko said to me, "it might be a good idea for you to go out for a little walk. Maybe 20 minutes. Sorry, but I think that would help."
I nodded and stood, pulling a jumper on over my shirt. "Thanks for stepping in," I said to Reiko.
"Don't mention it,"
she said with a wink.
"This is not your fault. Don't worry. By the time you come back, she'll be okay."
My feet carried me down the road, which was illuminated by the oddly unreal light of the moon, and into the woods. Beneath that moonlight, all sounds bore a strange reverberation. The hollow sound of my own footsteps seemed to come from another direction, as though I were hearing someone walking on the bottom of the sea. Behind me, every now and then, I would hear a crack or a rustle. A heavy pall hung over the forest, as if the animals of the night were holding their breath, waiting for me to pass. Where the road sloped upwards beyond the trees, I sat and looked towards the building where Naoko lived. It was easy to tell her room. All I had to do was find the one window towards the back where a faint light trembled. I focused on that point of light for a long, long time. It made me think of something like the final pulse of a soul's dying embers. I wanted to cup my hands over what was left and keep it alive. I went on watching it the way Jay Gatsby watched that tiny light on the opposite shore, night after night.
When I walked back to the front entrance of the building half an hour later, I could hear Reiko practicing the guitar. I padded up the stairs and tapped on the door to the flat. Inside, there was no sign of Naoko. Reiko sat alone on the carpet, playing her guitar. She pointed towards the bedroom door to let me know Naoko was in there. Then she set down the guitar on the floor and took a seat on the sofa, inviting me to sit next to her and dividing what wine was left between our two glasses.
"Naoko is fine," she said, touching my knee. "Don't worry. All she has to do is rest for a while. She'll calm down. She was just a little worked up. How about taking a walk with me in the meantime?"
"Good," I said. Reiko and I ambled down a road illuminated by street lamps. When we reached the area by the tennis and basketball courts, we sat on a bench. She picked up a basketball from under the bench and turned it in her hands. Then she asked me if I played tennis. "I knew how to play," I said, "but I was bad at it."
"How about basketball?"
"Not my strongest sport," I said.
"What is your strongest sport?"
Reiko asked, wrinkling the corners of her eyes with a smile,
"aside from sleeping with girls."
"I'm not so good at that either," I said, stung by her words.
"Just kidding," she said. "Don't get angry. But really, though, what are you good at?"
"Nothing special. I have things I like to do.
For instance?"
"Hiking, swimming, reading."
"You like to do things alone, then?"
"I guess so. I could never get excited about games you play with other people. I can't get into them. I lose interest."
"Then you have to come here in the winter. We do cross-country skiing.
I'm sure you'd like that. Tramping around in the snow all day, working up a good sweat."
Under the street lamp, Reiko stared at her right hand, as though she were inspecting an antique musical instrument.
"Does Naoko often get like that?" I asked.
"Every now and then," said Reiko, now looking at her left hand. "Every once in a while she'll get worked up and cry like that. But that's okay. She's letting out her feelings.
The scary thing is not being able to do that. When your feelings build up and harden and die inside, then you're in big trouble."
"Did I say something I shouldn't have?" "Not a thing. Don't worry. Just speak your mind honestly. That's the best thing. It may hurt a little sometimes, and someone may get upset the way Naoko did, but in the long run it's for the best. That's what you should do if you're serious about making Naoko well again. Like I told you in the beginning, you should think not so much about wanting to help her as wanting to recover yourself by helping her to recover. That's the way it's done here. So you have to be honest and say everything that comes to mind, while you're here at least. Nobody does that in the outside world, right?
I guess not, I said.
I've seen all kinds of people come and go in my time here, she said. Maybe too many people. So I can usually tell by looking at a person whether they're going to get better or not, almost by instinct. But in Naoko's case, I'm not sure. I have absolutely no idea what's going to happen to her. For all I know, she could be 100% recovered next month. Or she could go on like this for years. So I really can't tell you what to do aside from the most generalized kind of advice, to be honest and help each other. What makes Naoko such a hard case for you?
Probably because I like her so much. I think my emotions get in the way and I can't see her clearly. I mean, I really like her. But aside from that, she has a bundle of different problems that are all tangled up with each other, so that it's hard to unravel a single one. It may take a very long time to undo them all. Or something could trigger them to come unraveled all at once. It's kind of like that, which is why I can't be sure about her.
She picked up the basketball again, twirled it in her hands, and bounced it on the ground.
The most important thing is not to let yourself get impatient, Reiko said. This is one more piece of advice I have for you. Don't get impatient. Even if things are so tangled up you can't do anything, don't get desperate or blow a fuse and start yanking on one particular thread before it's ready to come undone. You have to realize it's going to be a long process and that you'll work on things slowly, one at a time.
Do you think you can do that?
I can try, I said. It may take a very long time, you know, and even then she may not recover completely. Have you thought about that?
I nodded.
Waiting is hard, she said, bouncing the ball, especially for someone your age. You just sit and wait for her to get better, without deadlines or guarantees. Do you think you can do that? Do you love Naoko that much?
I'm not sure, I said honestly. Like Naoko, I'm not really sure what it means to love another person, though she meant it a little differently. I do want to try my best, though. I have to, or else I won't know where to go. Like you said before, Naoko and I have to save each other. It's the only way for either of us to be saved.
And are you going to go on sleeping with girls you pick up?
I don't know what to do about that either, I said.
What do you think? Should I just keep waiting and masturbating? I'm not in complete control there either.
Reiko set the ball on the ground and patted my knee.
Look, she said, I'm not telling you to stop sleeping with girls. If you're okay with that, then it's okay. It's your life after all. It's something you have to decide. All I'm saying is you shouldn't use yourself up in some unnatural form. Do you see what I'm getting at? It would be such a waste. The years 19 and 20 are a crucial stage in the maturation of character. And if you allow yourself to become warped when you're that age, it will cause you pain when you're older. It's true. So think about it carefully. If you want to take care of Naoko, take care of yourself too.
I said I would think about it.
I was 20 myself once upon a time.
Would you believe it?
I believe it, of course.
Deep down? Deep down, I said with a smile. And I was cute, too. Not as cute as Naoko, but pretty damn cute. I didn't have all these wrinkles. I said I liked her wrinkles a lot. She thanked me. But don't ever tell another woman that you find her wrinkles attractive, she said. I like to hear it, but I'm the exception. I'll be careful, I said. She slipped a wallet from her trouser pocket and handed me a photo from the card holder. It was a color snapshot of a cute girl around 10 years old wearing skis and a brightly colored ski suit, standing on the snow, smiling sweetly for the camera.
Isn't she pretty?
My daughter, said Reiko. She sent me this in January. She's, what, 9 years old now. She has your smile, I said, returning the photo. Reiko pocketed the wallet and, with a sniff, put a cigarette between her lips and lit up. I was going to be a concert pianist, she said. I had talent. And people recognized it and made a fuss over me while I was growing up. I won competitions and had top marks in the conservatoire. And I was all set to study in Germany after graduation, not a cloud on the horizon. Everything worked out perfectly. And when it didn't, there was always somebody to fix it. But then one day something happened and it all blew apart. I was in my final year at the conservatoire, and there was a fairly important competition coming up. I practiced for it constantly, but all of a sudden the little finger of my left hand stopped moving. I don't know why, but it just did. I tried massaging it, soaking it in hot water, taking a few days off from practice. Nothing worked. So then I got scared and went to the doctors. They tried all kinds of tests, but they couldn't come up with anything. There was nothing wrong with the finger itself, and the nerves were okay, they said. There was no reason it should stop moving. The problem must be psychological. So I went to a psychiatrist, but he didn't really know what was going on either. Probably pre-competition stress, he said, and advised me to get away from the piano for a while. Reiko inhaled deeply and let the smoke out. Then she bent her neck to the side a few times. So I went to recuperate at my grandmother's place on the coast in Isu. I thought I'd forget about that particular competition and really relax, spend a couple of weeks away from the piano doing anything I wanted. But it was hopeless. Piano was all I could think about. Maybe my finger would never move again. How would I live if that happened? The same thoughts kept going round and round in my brain. And no wonder. Piano had been my whole life up to that point. I had started playing when I was 4, and grew up thinking about the piano and nothing else. I never did housework so as not to injure my fingers. People paid attention to me for that one thing, my talent at the piano. Take the piano away from a girl who's grown up like that, and what's left? So then, snap! My mind became a complete jumble. Total darkness. She dropped her cigarette to the ground and stamped it out, then bent her neck a few times again. That was the end of my dream of becoming a concert pianist. I spent 2 months in the hospital. My fingers started to move shortly after I arrived, so I was able to return to the conservatoire and graduate. But something inside me had vanished. Some jewel of energy or something had disappeared, evaporated from inside my body. The doctor said I lacked the mental strength to become a professional pianist and advised me to abandon the idea. So after graduating, I took pupils and taught them at home. But the pain I felt was excruciating. It was as if my life had ended. Here I was in my early 20s, and the best part of my life was over. Do you see how terrible that would be? I had such potential. Then woke up one day, and it had gone. No more applause. No one would make a big fuss over me. No one would tell me how wonderful I was. I spent day after day in the house teaching neighborhood children Bayer exercises and sonatinas. I felt so miserable. I cried all the time. To think what I had missed. I would hear about people who were far less talented than me winning second place in a competition, or holding a recital in such and such a hall, and the tears would pour out of me. My parents walked around on tiptoe, afraid of hurting me, but I knew how disappointed they were. All of a sudden, the daughter they had been so proud of was an ex-mental patient. They couldn't even marry me off. When you're living with people, you sense what they're feeling, and I hated it. I was afraid to go out, afraid the neighbors were talking about me, so then, snap, it happened again. The jumble, the darkness. It happened when I was 24, and this time I spent 7 months in the sanatorium. Not this place. A regular insane asylum with high walls and locked gates. A filthy place without pianos. I didn't know what to do with myself. All I knew was I wanted to get out of there as soon as I could, so I struggled desperately to get better. 7 months. A long 7 months. That's when my wrinkles started.
Reiko smiled, her lips stretching from side to side.
I hadn't been out of the hospital for long when I met a man and got married. He was a year younger than me, an engineer who worked in an aeroplane manufacturing company, and one of my pupils. A nice man. He didn't say a lot, but he was warm and sincere. He had been taking lessons from me for 6 months when all of a sudden he asked me to marry him. Just like that. One day when we were having tea after his lesson. Can you believe it? We had never dated or held hands. He took me totally off guard. I told him I couldn't get married. I said I liked him and thought he was a nice person, but that for certain reasons I couldn't marry him. He wanted to know what those reasons were. So I explained everything to him with complete honesty. That I had been hospitalized twice for mental breakdowns. I told him everything. What the cause had been, my condition, and the possibility that it could happen again. He said he needed time to think, and I encouraged him to take all the time he needed. But when he came for his lesson a week later, he said he still wanted to marry me. I asked him to wait 3 months. We would see each other for 3 months, I said, and if he still wanted to marry me at that point, we would talk about it again. We dated once a week for 3 months. We went everywhere and talked about everything, and I got to like him a lot. When I was with him, I felt as if my life had finally come back to me. It gave me a wonderful sense of relief to be alone with him. I could forget all those terrible things that had happened. So what if I hadn't been able to become a concert pianist? So what if I had spent time in mental hospitals? My life hadn't ended. Life was still full of wonderful things I hadn't experienced. If only for having made me feel that way, I felt tremendously grateful to him. After 3 months went by, he asked me again to marry him. And this is what I said to him. If you want to sleep with me, I don't mind. I've never slept with anybody, and I'm very fond of you. So if you want to make love to me, I don't mind at all. But marrying me is a whole different matter. If you marry me, you take on all my troubles, and they're a lot worse than you can imagine. He said he didn't care. That he didn't just want to sleep with me. He wanted to marry me, to share everything I had inside me. And he meant it. He was the kind of person who would only say what he really meant, and do anything he said. So I agreed to marry him.
It was all I could do. We got married, let's see, 4 months later, I think it was.
He fought with his parents over me, and they disowned him.
He was from an old family that lived in a rural part of Shikoku.
They had my background investigated and found out that I had been hospitalized twice. No wonder they opposed the marriage. So anyway, we didn't have a wedding ceremony. We just went to the registry office and registered our marriage and took a trip to Hakone for 2 nights. That was plenty for us. We were happy. And finally, I remained a virgin until the day I married. I was 25 years old. Can you believe it?
Reiko sighed and picked up the basketball again.
I thought that as long as I was with him, I would be all right, she went on. As long as I was with him, my troubles would stay away. That's the most important thing for a sickness like ours. A sense of trust. If I put myself in this person's hands, I'll be okay. If my condition starts to worsen, even the slightest bit, if a screw comes loose, he'll notice straight away, and with tremendous care and patience, he'll fix it. He'll tighten the screw again, put all the jumbled threads back in place. If we have that sense of trust, our sickness stays away. No more snap. I was so happy. Life was great. I felt as if someone had pulled me out of a cold, raging sea and wrapped me in a blanket and laid me in a warm bed. I had a baby 2 years after we were married, and then my hands were really full. I practically forgot about my sickness. I'd get up in the morning and do the housework and take care of the baby and feed my husband when he came home from work. It was the same thing day after day. But I was happy. It was probably the happiest time of my life. How many years did it last, I wonder? At least until I was 31. And then, all of a sudden, snap, it happened again. I fell apart. Reiko lit a cigarette. The wind died down. The smoke rose straight up and disappeared into the darkness of night. Just then I realized that the sky was filled with stars.
Something happened? I asked.
Yes, she said. Something very strange. As if a trap had been laid for me. Even now it gives me a chill just to think about it.
Reiko rubbed a temple with her free hand.
I'm sorry, though, making you listen to all this talk about me. You came here to see Naoko, not listen to my story.
I'd really like to hear it, though, I said. If you don't mind, I'd like to hear the rest.
Well, Reiko began, when our daughter entered kindergarten, I started playing again, little by little.
Not for anyone else, but for myself.
I started with short pieces by Bach, Mozart, Scarlatti.
After such a long blank period, of course, my feel for the music didn't come back straight away, and my fingers wouldn't move the way they used to. But I was thrilled to be playing the piano again. With my hands on the keys, I realized how much I had loved music, and how much I hungered for it. To be able to perform music for yourself is a wonderful thing. As I said before, I had been playing from the time I was 4 years old. But it occurred to me that I had never once played for myself. I had always been trying to pass a test, or practice an assignment, or impress somebody. Those are all important things, of course, if you are going to master an instrument. But after a certain age, you have to start performing for yourself. That's what music is. I had to drop out of the elite course and pass my 31st birthday before I was finally able to see that.
I would send my child off to kindergarten and hurry through the housework, then spend an hour or two playing music I liked.
So far, so good, right?
I nodded.
Then one day I had a visit from one of the ladies of the neighborhood, someone I at least knew well enough to say hello to on the street, asking me to give her daughter piano lessons. I didn't know the daughter. Although we lived in the same general neighborhood, our houses were still pretty far apart. But according to the woman, her daughter used to pass my house and loved to hear me play. She had seen me at some point, too, and now she was pestering her mother to let me teach her. She was in her fourth year of school, and had taken lessons from a number of people, but things had not gone well for one reason or another, and now she had no teacher. I turned her down. I had had that blank of several years, and while it might have made sense for me to take on an absolute beginner, it would have been impossible for me to pick up with someone who had had lessons for a number of years. Besides, I was too busy taking care of my own child, and, though I didn't say this to the woman, nobody can deal with the kind of child who changes teachers constantly. So then the woman asked me to at least do her daughter the favor of meeting her once. She was a fairly pushy lady, and I could see she was not going to let me off the hook that easily. So I agreed to meet the girl, but just meet her. 3 days later, the girl came to the house by herself. She was an absolute angel, with a kind of pure, sweet, transparent beauty. I had never, and have never, seen such a beautiful little girl. She had long, shiny hair as black as freshly ground Indian ink, slim, graceful arms and legs, bright eyes, and a soft little mouth that looked as if someone had just made it. I couldn't speak when I first saw her. She was so beautiful. Sitting on my sofa, she turned my living room into a gorgeous parlor. It hurt to look directly at her. I had to squint. So anyway, that's what she was like. I can still picture her clearly. Reiko narrowed her eyes, as if she were actually picturing the girl. Over coffee, we talked for a whole hour. Talked about all kinds of things, music, her school, just everything. I could see straight away she was a smart one. She knew how to hold a conversation. She had clear, shrewd opinions and a natural gift for drawing out the other person. It was almost frightening. Exactly what it was that made her frightening, I couldn't tell at the time. It just struck me how frighteningly intelligent she was. But in her presence, I lost any normal powers of judgment I might have had. She was so young and beautiful. I felt overwhelmed, to the point where I saw myself as an inferior specimen, a clumsy excuse for a human being who could only have negative thoughts about her because of my own warped and filthy mind. Reiko shook her head several times. If I were as pretty and smart as she was, I'd have been a normal human being. What more could you want if you were that smart and that beautiful? Why would you have to torment and walk all over your weaker inferiors if everybody loved you so much? What reason could there possibly be for acting that way? Did she do something terrible to you? Well, let me just say the girl was a pathological liar. She was sick, pure and simple. She made up everything, and while she was making up her stories, she would come to believe them. And then she would change things around her to fit her story. She had such a quick mind. She could always keep a step ahead of you and take care of things that would ordinarily strike you as odd. So it would never cross your mind that she was lying. First of all, no one would ever suspect that such a pretty little girl would lie about the most ordinary things. I certainly didn't. She told me tons of lies for 6 months before I had the slightest inkling anything was wrong. She lied about everything. And I never suspected. I know it sounds crazy. What did she lie about?
When I say everything, I mean everything.
Reiko gave a sarcastic laugh.
When people tell a lie about something, they have to make up a bunch of lies to go with the first one. Mythomania is the word for it. When the usual mythomaniac tells lies, they're usually the innocent kind, and most people notice. But not with that girl. To protect herself, she'd tell hurtful lies without batting an eyelid. She'd use everything she could get her hands on, and she would lie either more or less depending on who she was talking to. To her mother or close friends, who would know straight away, she hardly ever lied. Or if she had to tell one, she'd be really, really careful to tell lies that wouldn't come out. Or if they did come out, she'd find an excuse or apologize in that clingy voice of hers with tears pouring out of her beautiful eyes. No one could stay mad at her then. I still don't know why she chose me. Was I another victim to her? Or a source of salvation? I just don't know.
Of course, it hardly matters now. Now that everything is over. Now that I'm like this. A short silence followed.
She repeated what her mother had told me, that she had been moved when she heard me playing as she passed the house. She had seen me on the street a few times, too, and had begun to worship me. She actually used that word, worship. It made me turn bright red. I mean, to be worshipped by such a beautiful little doll of a girl. I don't think it was an absolute lie, though. I was in my 30s already, of course, and I could never be as beautiful and bright as she was, and I had no special talent. But I must have had something that drew her to me. Something that was missing in her, I suppose. That must have been what got her interested in me to begin with. I believe that now, looking back. And I'm not boasting. No, I think I know what you mean. She had brought some music with her and asked if she could play for me, so I let her. It was a Bach invention. Her performance was interesting, or should I say strange. It just wasn't ordinary. Of course, it wasn't polished. She hadn't been going to a professional school, and what lessons she had taken had been an on-and-off kind of thing. She was very much self-taught. Her sound was untrained. She'd have been rejected immediately at a music school audition. But she made it work. Although 90% was just terrible, the other 10% was there. She made it sing. It was music. And this was a Bach invention. So I got interested in her. I wanted to know what she was all about. Needless to say, the world is full of kids who can play Bach far better than she could, 20 times better. But most of their performances would have nothing to them. They'd be hollow, empty. This girl's technique was bad, but she had that little bit of something that could draw people, or draw me at least, into her performance. So I decided it might be worthwhile to teach her. Of course, retraining her at that point, to where she could become a pro, was out of the question. But I felt it might be possible to make her into the kind of happy pianist I was then, and still am. Someone who could enjoy making music for herself. This turned out to be an empty hope, though. She was not the kind of person who quietly goes about doing things for herself. This was a child who would make detailed calculations to use every means at her disposal to impress other people. She knew exactly what she had to do to make people admire and praise her. And she knew exactly what kind of performance it would take to draw me in. She had calculated everything, I'm sure, and put everything she had into practicing the most important passages over and over again for my benefit. I can see her doing it. Still, even now, after all of this came clear to me, I believe it was a wonderful performance, and I would feel the same chills down my spine if I could hear it again. Knowing all I know about her flaws, her cunning, and lies, I would still feel it. I'm telling you, there are such things in this world.
Reiko cleared her throat with a dry rasp and broke off.
So, did you take her as a pupil?
I asked.
Yeah. One lesson a week. Saturday mornings. Saturday was a day off at her school. She never missed a lesson. She was never late. She was an ideal pupil. She always practiced for her lessons. After every lesson, we'd have some cake and chat.
At that point, Reiko looked at her watch, as if suddenly remembering something.
Don't you think we should be getting back to the room? I'm a little worried about Naoko.
I'm sure you haven't forgotten about her now, have you?
Of course not. I laughed.
It's just that I was drawn into your story.
If you'd like to hear the rest, I'll tell it to you tomorrow. It's a long story. Too long for one sitting.
You're a regular Scheherazade.
I know, she said, joining her laughter with mine.
You'll never get back to Tokyo.
We retraced our steps through the path in the woods and returned to the flat. The candles had been extinguished, and the living room lights were out. The bedroom door was open, and the lamp on the night table was on, its pale light spilling into the living room. Naoko sat alone on the sofa in the gloom. She had changed into a loose-fitting blue gown, its collar pulled tight about her neck, her legs folded under her on the sofa. Reiko approached her and rested a hand on her crown.
"Are you all right now?"
"I'm fine."
"Sorry," answered Naoko in a tiny voice. Then she turned towards me and repeated her apology.
"I must have scared you."
"A little," I said with a smile.
"Come here," she said.
When I sat down next to her, Naoko, her legs still folded, leaned towards me until her face was nearly touching my ear, as though she were about to share a secret with me. Then she planted a soft kiss by my ear.
"Sorry,"
she said once more, this time directly into my ear, her voice subdued. Then she moved away from me.
"Sometimes," she said, "I get so confused I don't know what's happening."
"That happens to me all the time," I said. Naoko smiled and looked at me. "If you don't mind," I said, "I'd like to hear more about you. About your life here. What you do every day. The people you meet." Naoko talked about her daily routine in this place, speaking in short but crystal clear phrases. Wake up at 6 in the morning, breakfast in the flat, clean out the aviary, then usually farm work. She took care of the vegetables. Before or after lunch, she would have either an hour-long session with her doctor or a group discussion. In the afternoon, she could choose from among courses that might interest her, outside work or sports. She had taken several courses. French, knitting, piano, ancient history.
"Reiko is teaching me piano," she said. "She also teaches guitar.
We all take turns as pupils or teachers. Somebody with fluent French teaches French. One person who used to be in social studies teaches history. Another good at knitting teaches knitting. That's a pretty impressive school right there." "Unfortunately, I don't have anything I can teach anyone."
"Neither do I," I said.
"I put a lot more energy into my studies here than I ever did in university. I work hard and enjoy it. A lot."
"What do you do after supper? Talk with Reiko? Read? Listen to records? Go to other people's flats and play games? Stuff like that?"
"I do guitar practice and write my autobiography," said Reiko.
"Autobiography?"
"Just kidding," Reiko laughed. "We go to bed around 10. Pretty healthy lifestyle, wouldn't you say? We sleep like babies.
I looked at my watch.
It was a few minutes before 9.
I guess she'll be getting sleepy soon.
That's okay. We can stay up late today, said Naoko. I haven't seen you in such a long time. I want to talk more. So talk.
When I was alone before, all of a sudden I started thinking about the old days, I said. Do you remember when Kazuki and I came to visit you at the hospital? The one on the seashore?
I think it was the first year of the 6th form. When I had the chest operation?
Naoko said with a smile.
Sure, I remember. You and Kazuki came on a motorbike. You brought me a box of chocolates, and they were all melted together. They were so hard to eat. I don't know. It seems like such a long time ago.
Yeah, really. I think you were writing a poem then, a long one.
All girls write poems at that age, Naoko tittered. What reminded you of that all of a sudden?
I wonder. The smell of the sea wind, the oleanders. Before I knew it, they just popped into my head.
Did Kazuki come to see you at the hospital a lot? No way. We had a big fight about that afterwards. He came once, and then he came with you, and that was it for him. He was terrible. And that first time, he couldn't sit still, and he only stayed about 10 minutes. He brought me some oranges and mumbled all this stuff I couldn't understand. And he peeled an orange for me and mumbled more stuff, and he was out of there. He said he had a thing about hospitals.
Naoko laughed.
He was always a kid about that kind of stuff. I mean, nobody likes hospitals, right? That's why people visit people in hospitals, to make them feel better and perk up their spirits and stuff. But Kazuki just didn't get it.
He wasn't so bad when the two of us came to see you, though.
He was just his usual self, because you were there, said Naoko. He was always like that around you. He struggled to keep his weaknesses hidden. I'm sure he was very fond of you. He made a point of letting you see only his best side. He wasn't like that with me. He'd let his guard down. He could be really moody. One minute he'd be chattering away, and the next he'd be depressed. It happened all the time. He was like that from the time he was little. He did keep trying to change himself, to improve himself, though.
Naoko recrossed her legs on the sofa.
He tried hard, but it didn't do any good. And that would make him really angry and sad. There was so much about him that was fine and beautiful, but he could never find the confidence he needed. I've got to do that, I've got to change this, he was always thinking, right up to the end. Poor Kazuki.
Still, I said, if it's true that he was always struggling to show me his best side, I'd say he succeeded. His best side was all that I could see.
Naoko smiled. He'd be thrilled if he could hear you say that. You were his only friend.
And Kazuki was my only friend, I said. There was never anybody I could really call a friend before him or after him.
That's why I loved being with the two of you. His best side was all that I could see then, too. I could relax and stop worrying when the three of us were together. Those were my favorite times. I don't know how you felt about it.
I used to worry about what you were thinking, I said, giving my head a shake.
The problem was that that kind of thing couldn't go on forever, said Naoko. Such perfect little circles are impossible to maintain. Kazuki knew it, and I knew it, and so did you. Am I right?
I nodded.
To tell you the truth, though, Naoko went on, I loved his weak side, too. I loved it as much as I loved his good side. There was absolutely nothing mean or underhand about him. He was weak, that's all. I tried to tell him that, but he wouldn't believe me. He'd always tell me it was because we had been together since we were three. I knew him too well, he'd say. I couldn't tell the difference between his strong points and his flaws. They were all the same to me. He couldn't change my mind about him, though. I went on loving him just the same, and I could never be interested in anyone else.
Naoko looked at me with a sad smile.
Our boy-girl relationship was really unusual, too. It was as if we were physically joined somewhere. If we happened to be apart, some special gravitational force would pull us back together again. It was the most natural thing in the world when we became boyfriend and girlfriend. It was nothing we had to think about or make any choices about. We started kissing at 12 and petting at 13. I'd go to his room or he'd come to my room, and I'd finish him off with my hands. It never occurred to me that we were being precocious. It just happened as a matter of course. If he wanted to play with my breasts or pussy, I didn't mind at all. Or if he had cum he wanted to get rid of, I didn't mind helping him with that either. I'm sure it would have shocked us both if someone had accused us of doing anything wrong, because we weren't. We were just doing what we were supposed to do. We had always shown each other every part of our bodies. It was almost as if we owned each other's bodies jointly. For a while, at least, we made sure we didn't go any further than that, though. We were afraid of my getting pregnant, and had almost no idea at that point of how to go about preventing it. Anyway, that's how Kazuki and I grew up together, hand in hand, an inseparable pair. We had almost no sense of the oppressiveness of sex, or the anguish that comes with the sudden swelling of the ego that ordinary kids experience when they reach puberty. We were totally open about sex. And where our egos were concerned, the way we absorbed and shared each other's, we had no strong awareness of them. Do you see what I mean?
I think so, I said.
We couldn't bear to be apart. So if Kazuki had lived, I'm sure we would have been together, loving each other, and gradually growing unhappy.
Unhappy?
Why's that?
With her fingers, Naoko combed her hair back several times. She had taken her hair slide off, which made the hair fall over her face when she dropped her head forward.
"Because we would have had to pay the world back what we owed it," she said, raising her eyes to mine. "The pain of growing up. We didn't pay when we should have, so now the bills are due. Which is why Kazuki did what he did, and why I'm here. We were like kids who grew up naked on a desert island. If we got hungry, we'd just pick a banana. If we got lonely, we'd go to sleep in each other's arms. But that kind of thing doesn't last forever. We grew up fast and had to enter society, which is why you were so important to us. You were the link connecting us with the outside. We were struggling through you to fit in with the outside world as best we could. In the end, it didn't work, of course.
I nodded.
I wouldn't want you to think that we were using you, though. Kazuki really loved you. It just so happened that our connection with you was our first connection with anyone else. And it still is. Kazuki may be dead, but you are still my only link with the outside world. And just as Kazuki loved you, I love you. We never meant to hurt you. But we probably did. We probably ended up making a deep wound in your heart. It never occurred to us that anything like that might happen.
Naoko lowered her head again and fell silent.
Hey, how about a cup of cocoa?
Suggested Reiko.
Good. I'd really like some, said Naoko.
I'd like to have some of that